I'm Jamie, he's Locker. This is the Green Zone on a Monday afternoon as we get set for the Home Run Derby in Major League Baseball tonight on a little bit of a delay or a little bit of a pause to the regular season schedule with the Midsummer Classic. Two Blue Jays taking part in the game tomorrow, not the Home Run Derby.
Vladdy.
Kirk and Vladdy Guerrero Jr. But every Monday at this time, we bring on the big man, our game day analyst, Belton Johnson, to recap a Rider game from the weekend that took about 18 hours to finally get through after the delay on Friday night. But kudos to Belton Johnson. We had a lot of questions on Friday night and Saturday after they announced the delay. And it was a major, major topic of conversation, which was, will Belton cook twice for his tailgating tip? And he did. He did. He brought in more food on Saturday.
There was a conversation about making you the champ today.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
But you fell a little short to all the fans that showed up for the game on Saturday.
Which is rightfully so, right? Because the fans that showed up for the game, you know, that second go-around, I got to give it to them as well. Kudos to coming back out, especially people that live, you know, a few hours away, right? We know it's not easy to always get to Rider games, so I'm with you on that, with the fans getting that.
One of my favorite signs at the game on Saturday, Belton, was, I slept in my truck for this.
Well, it wasn't hardly any places around here to stay, I'm sure of that, right?
Yeah. What did you bring in?
He brought in bacon-wrapped jalapeno poppers.
Okay, I know that. That was Friday, but what did you bring in on Saturday?
No, that's what he brought in on Friday. Oh, on Saturday. Okay. On Friday was
the chicken?
Chicken lollipop, bacon-wrapped chicken lollipops.
Okay, there you go. Okay.
We had too much bacon, I think. But
there, no, whoa, 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 whoa. Settle down, Belton. Too much bacon. What are you talking about?
No such thing, Belton.
Okay, Belton, now that you've had a couple of nights to sleep on it, what the heck was that on Saturday afternoon from the once undefeated Saskatchewan Rough Riders?
I'm still trying to figure that one out, Jamie. And again, the Riders, they are a team that averaged, 29 points a game, and they only were able to score 10. So I figure it has to do with the guys in the trenches, the O-line, the D-line, they weren't doing their jobs. And secondary, they're getting burnt or, you know, blown assignments on the back end there. So that's what I kind of equated to.
The one conversation that we've had, the sort of underlying theme today, Belton, is how much of the blame should go to the coaching staff for this loss on Saturday, the postponed game, and it's worth a conversation because everyone's anticipating that Corey Mace is going to, you know, come back to practice tomorrow, and everyone's going to be, you know, a little bit worried about practice tomorrow on the team. But if the coaching staff is somewhat responsible for what happened on the weekend, does he take it easier on the guys or no?
I don't think he's going to take it easy on the guys by no means, but I definitely don't put this one on Corey Mace. What I saw was, well, maybe some of it looked like they got out schemed a little bit, but from what I saw, you know, the O-line, you know, they weren't getting any push. They were either getting pushed backwards, which is not the way to go for it, you know, the O-line, or they were just stagnant. They were in place, which then they did not create the running lanes and everything for the running back. You know, a reason I say maybe out schemed a bit because I don't know. It looked like the Stampeders had their number on defense where, you know, they brought one more than the Riders could block, or it looked like almost like a run blitz. Like, I went back, I looked at film, and I could see the linebackers, like, running downhill, and they were putting their helmets up under the old lineman chin, pushing them back, right? Like, that's what I saw. And I don't think he could fault the coaching staff for that, because that's purely effort on the player part there.
So are we all conceding, Belton Johnson, that the Calgary Stampeders are now the best team in the Canadian Football League?
Hey, go Stamps, man. And the only reason I say that, Jamie, is, you know, we saw what a couple weeks ago, the Stamps, they beat the Bombers. They had my attention right then and there. Because the Bombers, I feel like, is a pretty solid team in the CFL here. And then, you know, the Riders, they're undefeated. They're 4-0. And I'm like, oh, they're going to give it to the Riders, right? Or, I'm sorry, the Riders going to give it to the Stamps. And then when that delay happened, and I know the Stamps, ain't no way they slept that good, you know, the night before, right? Because they were up to 10. And I know what those dorm beds are like. They're horrible, man. Riders got a good night's sleep in their own beds. They're at home. No logistic things to worry about. I even upped my score, Jamie. I went from 24-20 Rider win to 30-20 Rider win. Yeah, I'm the Stamps. They are the better team, man.
One of the things, Belton, that was bothering me, and I don't know if you can share some insight from your perspective, but I was amazed at how much time Vernon Adams Jr. had with the ball. That was the frustrating thing to me. They just didn't seem to put any pressure on him, and he had he wasn't scrambling when he ran it. It didn't seem like it was something that he had to do. It seemed like it was almost part of the play, and he was able to bomb it down the field a couple of times. That bothered me because this is supposed to be one of the better defenses. The Riders are supposed to have one of the better defenses in the CFL. Did you see anything that that jumped out at you based on Vernon having the ball so much?
Well, I just see the Stamps. The way I saw it is the game was, you know, one-sided, right? Especially in that first half where, you know, the Stampeders, they were able to run the ball on the Riders, which that Rider defense, we know, was one of the top defense in stopping runs, not this past weekend at all. And once the Stamps were able to run the ball and establish that, Vernon Adams, I mean, outside of those first couple plays, right, where he threw the one interception there and everything, the Stamps were in full control. Their O-line was, you know, they were run blocking, they were pass blocking. And even when the Riders were able to get a little bit of pressure on Vernon Adams, I mean, he was able to elude those guys and get away and either throw the ball out of bounds or make a big play.
All right, as we get set for the BC Lions, what are you thinking, Belton? I know you don't have to pick until Saturday officially. I know Evan Bray will tell you and ask on Friday, and everybody will ask you Friday. But where's your early feeling on the chances against a Nathan Rourke-led Lions team rather than the Masoli one they played a few weeks ago?
Well, Jamie, I'm worried about that bend defense right now, right? you know, there are some holes out there, and somebody's got to make some plays on that back end, which we saw did not happen. The Riders, they do give up a ton of passing yards. And Nathan Rourke, you know, just go back a couple years ago. I mean, when he's on point, man, he is on point, right? And they got some really solid receivers. So that Riders, they got to get pressure on this guy. So that's the only thing I'm kind of worried about right now, Jamie, is the passing offense of the BC line versus the Riders' defensive pass coverage.
Another thing that I noticed was that they had a couple of short, like second and two or second and three or whatever. Mm-hmm. And they were, you know, in the red zone and they left Trevor out there. I'm wondering if you were seeing the same thing I was saying, because I was also hearing it in the stands. Like, why aren't they putting Tommy Stevens out there? Tommy Tsunami. Like, what's the decision behind the lack of decision there? Because I don't remember seeing him on Saturday. Jamie, am I wrong? Did they use Tommy at all?
He had like one or two carries, and that's it.
That was it, yeah. And, you know, especially when you're starting to get down in the red zone area, you know, maybe you should use him a bit. I vividly remember it was, third and maybe three or four, And, you know, Trevor Harris is in, and I was questioning why not put Tommy Stevens in, because, again, the Stamps, they had the Riders' number, and I knew if Trevor Harris, if he tries to scramble, I don't feel like he's going to get the yardage, and he did not get the yardage.
I get going for it. Like, I understand.
Oh, a lot of people said, oh, if they would have taken the points there and then taken the points earlier, there would have been an 8-point game, and then they get a touchdown and a 2-point. No.
They backed up, right?
There was two attempts in the fourth quarter in the red zone where they were third and whatever, short.
Like, if you have the ball at the 8-yard line and you kick a field goal, like Stamps got the ball at the 40. Like, you're giving up like 32 yards of field position to the.
Yep.
And so, you're still down by two possessions, so it doesn't get you very far.
It was okay with the gamble, but why is Harrison there?
Yeah. We were saying it on the postgame show, too.
What is Tommy's average?
What did Daryl say? It's like 4.5 or something like that. Why not? Maybe it'll be one of those things they tweak and change and look at this week against the Lions. But, Belton Johnson, do you have a tease for us
for
the tailgating tip with Sherwood Co-op on Saturday?
I do, Jamie. How can I say it? Scoops. I'll just leave it at that.
You should see the excitement on Jamie's face right now.
If Belton's bringing scoops, we're getting dipped, baby! Okay, Belton, I'll see you Saturday.
What would life be without dip?
As Mace said, belt to ass, right?
That's what it was on Saturday. That is for sure for the Stamps and the Riders. That is our Green Zone analyst, Belton Johnson. Of course, Saturday, it is the Riders and the BC Lions. In a rematch from a few weeks ago where it was belt to ass from the Riders handing it to the BC Lions, we'll see how it goes this time. 3:00 is the Green Zone pregame show on Saturday with the Lions hosting the Riders. More coming up here on the Green Zone, including a look at the Edmonton Elks. And, whoo, it reeks up in Edmonton again. A stinker yesterday against the Lions. This is 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
Hello, I love you, let me jump in your game.
Jamie and Locker with you here on the Green Zone as we now know the NHL season, October 7th, that it will be the first couple of games. Triple header starts in Florida as they raise another Stanley Cup banner. Meanwhile, the team they beat, the Edmonton Oilers, making changes on the bench. Paul Coffey, who was kind of voluntold to be the assistant coach the last year and a bit.
He didn't really want to.
No. Is back to a senior advisor role with the owner, Daryl Cates. He's no longer an assistant coach, so they've hired a new coach there. But they've also changed the goaltender coach. There's been much speculation that Dustin Schwartz is no longer with it.
I don't hate it, right? I know that the coaching staff can't be blamed for everything that went wrong in that final with Florida. But at the end of the day, if you just go back to the status quo, are you gonna be able to climb the mountain, right? Probably not. So. And it can go both. It can go either way, right? You can make a bunch of changes.
That was a bad move. And then you're the Edmonton Elks. They made a bunch of changes.
Exactly.
And look how's that going for
them. But maybe this revitalizes the team, and it's the spark they need to, you know, for continued success. I don't know. I'm trying to look at it from a positivity perspective.
You need to. Because I just mentioned the second Stanley Cup banner is going up in Florida to start the season October the 7th. Jamie and Locker with you on a Monday night. The Major League Baseball Home Run Derby is going at 6:00 Saskatchewan time. You're picking Jazz
Chisholm
from the Yankees?
I am, yep. I got some inside intel.
I'm just going to go with Cal Raleigh, the league leader in home runs.
Hasn't got a chance.
He's got his dad, who's a former college coach. Do you know how many times that dad has thrown a ball over the plate to his son to not, like, it's over. It's over.
All right. You got your guy. I got my guy.
We'll see how it works out. MLB
Home Run Derby tonight, and then, of course, the game goes tomorrow. So a little pause in the MLB.
I actually like the Derby. Do you like the Derby? I enjoy it.
I think they found a format that works now that it's timed, and because there was times where it's like it was a little slow. It's like one pitch and then wham, and then the guy would back up and it was be like, okay, and it took too long. Now that there's like a clock and you got this amount of time and this many pitches and let's go, a little bit of a bonus if they hit a ball over 400 feet or 425 and it keeps the bonus clock going and those types of things. I like that angle to it. So we'll be watching tonight.
Like rules. You're a big rule guy.
I don't like rules. I just want things to move along. Just move it along. Let's go.
Yeah. But I mean, you went to look at all the rules for the Home Run Derby and look to see if there are any changes.
I want
to
know what the format is because it changes every year. It seems like it changes every year with the Home Run Derby. So round of eight players, they go. Top four home runs, they make then they split them into one semifinal with two guys and one semifinal with two guys, and then those two battle to see who goes to the final. So it's a three-rounder. It goes from 8-4-2, and then they hand out the trophy.
I do remember it dragging a bit in the past. Anyway.
Felt like waiting for a smoke to clear at Mosaic Stadium. Meanwhile, the Edmonton Elks... Oof, that was an ugly one yesterday. Matthew Iwanek from Edmonton Sports Talk to talk about the Elk season so far. But it's interesting that yesterday also coincided with this.
There has to be consequences now. There has to be consequences now. Just, there has to be consequences.
That was 12 years ago yesterday.
No way.
Does there have to be consequences now again for Edmonton after a pitiful display yesterday at Commonwealth Stadium?
One, our morning boys use that Cavis clip forever. They created a remix out of it, and I don't even know if they knew that it was the anniversary yesterday of that. But yeah, like, all sorts of I guess there has to be consequences, but at the same time, it's like, what consequences can you do? You know, what are we talking about here in terms of consequences? Is it time for a change of quarterback? Is it time to cut some players and bring some people in? Like, the problem is the Edmonton Elks overhauled this roster. They overhauled the whole organization, really. But they overhauled this roster back in February. And it's like, can you really do not need to give a little bit of time to allow more things to gel or to work through things? But when you have a performance like yesterday, it really is the cause for Ed Hervey and Mark Killam to sit there and have to serious conversations where they might have to sit there and go, consequences. It's like, it's the Elks have gotten better week in and week out this season. Every week they're taking the next step on the staircase, and then yesterday came and they just fell down the entire staircase and they're twitching at the bottom of it right now. Like, I don't know what's going on with this team right now. So there's got to be some sort of consequences. The question is, where do you go first here? Where do you start first? Because there's so much new to this team that who gets the, lack of better term, short end of the stick and doesn't get the time to grow through this.
Maddie, we got this text just before we got you on. It's from Terry. Elks game in Regina. Are we finally going to see Fajardo make his debut at Mosaic?
He's never played against the Riders, will he?
Has he not?
He's always been on the sideline, either hurt or as the backup since he left with the Montreal Alouettes. He's never actually taken a snap against the Riders.
That's a good stat to have. I would be surprised if they go away from Trey to start that game. Now, Trey, I think, will go into that game on a short leash. But even yesterday, like, as I'm watching that, they took a while to go to Cody Fajardo. It wasn't until the fourth quarter that Cody Fajardo went behind center. When I would argue, if it wasn't at halftime, maybe after the first or second series of the third quarter, they should have went to Cody Fajardo because it wasn't working. Like, Trey's numbers were horrendous yesterday. They've committed to Trey Ford to be the starting quarterback of this team. Like, you look at the contract you received, the guaranteed money, the hard money keeps growing as you get into year two and year three of this deal. So they're committed to developing and growing Trey Ford as a starting quarterback. So I don't think they would be ready to have him sit for that game. Because I also think, like, there was a game, there was a two-game set against Winnipeg last year. He started the first game and they lost. And immediately, Jarris Jackson went to MBT for the second game, where that was probably a time you should have let Trey try to bounce back from a poor performance. Yeah. I think that's maybe what you'll see from this coaching staff, is allowing Trey to bounce back from this performance and see what he can do. Because, like, we saw last week against Ottawa, we saw the ceiling of Trey Ford. It's quite high. Like, it's pretty good. It's a starting quarterback in the Canadian Football League. Unfortunate thing is, yesterday we saw maybe what the floor is for Trey Ford, and that's really low. And he's got to find a way to bring that floor up a bit, because games like yesterday just aren't good enough. But I don't think we'll see Cody as the starter just yet. Now, if they lose against Saskatchewan, different story for the next game against Hamilton. But I think they're going to let Trey try to maybe play through this. And I also think that is the right move. Like, he's got to start winning, but I have no problem if I'm Mark Killam going to Trey saying, hey, you're starting this game, but we'll switch early. We'll make the switch if we have to in that second quarter going into the third quarter, so you better go produce.
Matt Iwanek joining us of Edmonton Sports Talk. EdmontonSportsTalk.com is where you find their shows. And with Trey Ford, you had to, lack of a butter him up this offseason, you know, going into a contract year and all that stuff, and tell him the things he wanted to hear. And, okay, he's the starter. But is he? Do you see franchise quarterback out of Trey Ford, or did they put the cart in front of the horse to make that decision?
This is why, I'll take you back to a year ago, this is why I got so upset with the MBT signing, because we should have went through last season knowing what Trey Ford was as starting quarterback, and we shouldn't be having these conversations this year. But because they didn't play Trey Ford, we didn't still know what he was, and the Elks had to go make a move. I see what he did against Winnipeg a couple of weeks ago. I see what he did last week against Ottawa, and I see a starting quarterback there. Now, is he an elite starting quarterback? Is he Nathan Rourke? Is he Chad Kelly? At this point, I don't think I could say that's what he can become. But it's the bad where you then really sit there and be like, can he be consistent enough? So, like, honestly, to answer your question, I don't know. I really don't know at this moment in time, because he shows the flashes of a quarterback that could make the throw. He shows flashes in games where he makes that tough throw to the sideline, or he can throw and hit the receiver in stride. But then you have a game like yesterday where he underthrows Steven Dunbar in the first drive of the game. It's an interception. That's almost the turning point. And then because of that, it's like he panics and he doesn't know what to do, and then he overforces everything. And yesterday after that, missed Rankin and missed Zach Mathis by overthrowing them, almost because he's making up for the underthrow to Steven Dunbar. You had to keep Trey unless you're sitting there saying, look, we're bringing Davis Alexander. You know, you needed to come with some sort of starting quarterback. And that's what the fans wanted, was Trey. But they gave him a lot of money without knowing that for sure he was the starting quarterback. So that's a fair point right there. But I do see a quarterback here. The question is, can he just be consistent enough? And I feel like at this point in this season, he's regressed from last year. And that's not a good thing to say when you've just given the keys to the car.
So, Matty, we had a situation where a game was not played on Friday, played on Saturday here in Saskatchewan. And by all accounts, myself included, this coaching staff here should be taking a hard, long look in the mirror about that performance on Saturday. I think they need to chew on what happened on the field. And I get the sense that the coaching staff in Edmonton might be doing a similar reevaluation based on the performance on Sunday. How much blame should, a lot of talk about the quarterback here, but how much blame should Mark Killam be taking for where Edmonton is at right now?
Well, I think a fair bit, and I think it's not just him, it's his coordinators as well, and J.C. Sherrod and Jordan McSimmick. Like, at some point, you're the coaches of the team. You set the tone for an organization. And I'll say one thing that really annoyed me about the Elks game yesterday from an Elks perspective was, like, I didn't even see a fight in them. I didn't even see, like, a care that they were losing. Like, throw your helmet. Go, you know, a BC Lion player, I think it was Gary Peters, got called for spearing. One of your players got speared by a BC line, and then they started taunting the crowd after that. And you just let it happen. Like, go take a 15-yard unnecessary roughness penalty yourself. Go do something to show that you care, that you are just getting destroyed by the BC lines at your home. And to me, that comes from the top. That comes from your head coach and the staff. And J.C. Sherritt, you know, first year as a defensive coordinator in professional football, he hasn't been good enough. He keeps dialing up the wrong plays, it seems. He goes for the blitzes, and they never get to the quarterback. He'll call plays and his secondary just, you know, man coverage and his secondary just gets beat, they can't handle it. And Jordan Maksimek, like, calls such a weird offense right now where it's way too complicated, it seems, but there's also no rhythm. There's no flow. There's no similarities week in and week out. Like, yesterday, going into the game, the BC Lions had the worst run defense in the Canadian Football League, just the worst. And the Elks didn't run the football in week one, and then yesterday they rushed the ball five times with their two running backs. Five times against the defense that has the worst run defense. And the flip side to that is the BC Lions actually have the best pass defense in the Canadian Football League going into yesterday. And you chose to just go with a passing attack. Like, it makes no sense. We don't see screens. We don't see slants. And, like, I know Paul LaPolice in SportsCenter last night even brought up a good point where it's like, why aren't you utilizing Trey's legs and having designed runs for Trey? I think every single run Trey Ford has had this year has been him
scrambling
to take off and run. Him scrambling. Why would you not mix in the occasional rollout where he goes? Or, you know, just a straight-up QB draw or something. He has a strength that not many players in this league have when it comes to his speed and his elusiveness, and you're choosing not to use it at all. So when it comes to the Edmonton Elks, like Trey, poor yesterday. The defense, they can't make a stop, you know, at all. But this also comes now down to coaching, where all eyes are going to be on Mark Killam now, where it's like, look, you wanted to be a head coach for a long time. You've got it. Now you've got a bye week. You better come out and have this team ready to go, and you have to have those hard conversations. And there are going to have to be some tough decisions probably had, if not for Saskatchewan the week after, because this was such a bad loss. This is one of the worst losses that you would have had in a long time. Like, think about the time of possession. Three quarters, basically, the BC Lions had the football. Three quarters. It's ridiculous. So there's a lot of heat right now that's going towards not just Mark Killam, but him and his two OCs and Sherritt and Maksimek.
That is Matthew Iwanyk from EdmontonSportsTalk.com on the state of the Elks. And it ain't good right now again. Champs and Chumps coming up next on 980 CJME and 650 CKOM.
You two are winners. Big winners.
I think you're shagadelic, baby. You're switched on. You're smashing.
You tried your best, and you failed miserably.
The only thing I'm addicted to right now is winning.
You're an idiot.
You're a bad person.
Each and every day, one champ, one chump on the Green Zone. Let's start with the chump. Listen closely. What do you think that sound was, Locker? Let me play it again.
Tennis racket.
You're very close.
I know the answer.
It was at Wimbledon. But that is the sound of a champagne cork popping.
Someone said someone popped the champagne.
There's a cork on the court.
On the court.
It landed.
That's next level.
Right beside the center. Yeah.
Doesn't land near a player.
Next level irritation.
Yeah.
The player's about to serve. Thank you.
I didn't know that was a thing. But this is apparently
it's a thing.
We talked to Sarah Mills earlier.
But yeah, champagne bottles.
I don't know if I've ever seen the cork go into the playing area, though.
And during the gentleman's final?
I don't think I've ever seen
Lance next to, and he like looks over. The young bald girl goes charging over, picks it up, and like she didn't know what to do with it. She just kind of tossed it over behind her. Yeah. Chomp. Okay, pop the champagne cork. Like, learn how to pop a champagne cork properly, and not direct it at the court while you're having your bubbly during the Wimbledon final.
Well, you know what that might have been? That might have been when you take the wire off, sometimes prematurely, it pops. Right? You've ever had that? Where you take the wire off and she goes.
Oh yeah.
That's what this
was. You unscrew that little wire thing, and then boom! It was... There it goes. Sure. Yeah. Maybe that's it. Maybe that's it.
There's a pill still, for that.
You just don't aim it at the court. And we got a
put
champ.
Put a rag over it.
The champ is Saskatchewan Rough Rider fans. You, Rider Nation. Especially those who came back on Saturday. You didn't travel miles.
I didn't have to travel.
You were on a scooter. There are people who traveled hours upon hours both
people
ways.
People had slept in their cars and trucks.
Those are champs here on the Green Zone.